Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to the Coaching Call podcast. On this podcast, we'll cover various types of coaching by trainers in sports, martial arts, fitness, and business. We'll discuss each coach's methods to getting the most out of their respective athletes or clients and how they attempt to change the platform in which they coach. Join us on a fun adventure as we discuss unique coaching styles. We've all been coached before, in school, at work, or on a team. Coaching is a universal part of how we get others to get something done. Join your host, Rafael, and his guests on this unique journey in coaching.
Hi, I'm Sifu Rafael, and this is the Coaching Call podcast. If you enjoy this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. This episode was made possible by listeners like you. If you enjoy my show, go ahead and buy me a cup of coffee. Make it a large. To donate, go to paypal.me/SifuRafael. That's SifuRafael. I'm trying to keep this podcast free of advertisements. Anything you can donate is greatly appreciated. Thank you. I really appreciate your support. Today's guest is Amy Green. She's been covering boxing since 2004 and does double duty as a boxing publicist. Amy, thank you so much for joining me on the Coaching Call podcast. How are you today?
I'm fine today. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. So I'm excited to talk to you because you are into something that I love, and that's boxing.
Yes, sir.
How did you get started with that?
I watched boxing as a little girl growing up with my dad. It was probably one of his favorite sports. And I happened into it because I got tired of other gyms here in town. And the boxing gym that was here in town was across the street from where I got my nails done. So one day I just visited and I started working out there and then started watching more and more fights and thought, let me see if I could handle the writing aspect of it. And I started writing for prizefightnews.com. And then from there, I started working in publicity. Now I write for Max Boxing, and I've still got some fighters that I do work for.
When it came down, you were watching boxing. Then you realized you wanted to do boxing, and then you started writing about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's definitely getting deep into it. What attracted you about writing about boxing?
I like to write. My brother is a retired newspaper editor, and I think it's just something that kind of happened. You know, I guess maybe there's like a verbiage gene that runs in our family, perhaps. It was just something I wanted to do, and I wanted to be able to inform as well as entertain, you know, make people, you know, introduce people to the writers, different topics. The challenge for me still remains to, you know, do fight coverage because I don't want to make a technical error in writing. So, you know, I'm very cautious with that still. But I like to make sure that people know about the sports and the issues and the people that are the previous stars, the current stars, the future, the past. I just like to, like I said, inform as well as entertain.
Right. Who would you say is your favorite boxer?
Current day, all time, or what?
Give me all of them.
I have a lot of prospects that I really like, and my favorite current day prospect, I'm going to have to go with Virgil Ortiz Jr. Hearns, Hagler, Ali, of course, Floyd Mayweather. Then I have personal favorites for different reasons. One which would be Bernard Hopkins.
Controversial,
of course. He's controversial, but he's technical and he's his own person. Always been an original. I always want to push and encourage and inform people about the fighters that I work for. So of course I have two prospects right now that are young and undefeated, and that would be Kid Austin, who is Floyd Schofield Jr., and Keon Papillon, who was the son of Jason Papillon, who was a former NABF light welterweight champion. I still have also Diego Magdaleno that I worked for, and some guys in Atlanta, and a fighter named Abel Aparicio and his brother David, who were trained by my client, retired female champion Terry Moss.
Mm. So when you say your clients, how are they your clients?
I do the I work with them doing their publicity.
Oh, okay. So you're making sure that they're getting noticed.
You're getting their notice, just doing a little bit of everything. I've been with Terry now for 10 years, and it's really more so an effort of working with her on her promotions when she does them. And we're in the Women's Hall of Fame together. She's inducted and I'm on the board of directors.
Mm. How did that happen? How did you get onto the board of directors?
Sue Fox is the creator of the board of directors, and she asked me if I would serve on the board.
That was easy.
I started out initially working for Arnie Rosenthal and Ken Weiss, who created the all-women series, A Ring of Their Own. And then I just kind of mainly, before I started in with handling male and female fighters, publicity-wise, I mainly did females prior to that. So I followed the sport and have worked closely with Sue on other projects. So I was thrilled and pleased and honored when she asked me.
So what does it take to become a publicist?
A little bit of everything.
Enlighten us a little bit.
First of all, you have to know your people, and you have to have a real knowledge of your sport and learn more about them than just what they do. Their backstories. You want to create something. The boxing media is always going to be there to cover the fight and take care of your statistics and the things that happen. But you want to create someone that puts butts in seats.
Mm, very cool.
So if you can work with them and develop them as a personality and as a person and not just a boxer, then you're going to deal. That's going to bring in different fans. I have Kid Austin, who's 2-0 right now. He's in the 130-pound weight class. For a period of time in his life, he and his father were homeless.
Mm.
And since then, they've made it an effort in the Austin area and wherever they are to reach out to homeless shelters and things like that. So you establish somebody with your client or your fighter or whatever, you establish something within them that's something they like to do, whether it's giving back, whether they have a hobby or something, that you can expose that fact to people. And that way, someone that may never have seen a boxing match in their life is going to come see this kid because of the help that he gave, or to support him, or because, you know, they saw what he had been through and he encouraged them.
Right, right.
So you want to take an aspect of a fighter and their personality and kind of expose that to where that brings new people to the table. Like if somebody that you're working with is a real culinary talent, then you have them involved in similar activities where they may be doing No Kid Hungry campaigns or something like that, and that thereby encourages people that have a culinary interest to come see this kid fight or attend their event or gain an interest with.
Mm.
So you do a little bit other than writing press releases and garnering interviews. You know, you do try and put them forward in any fashion that you can. Like I said, the boxing media will be there. You just try to create interest and drive new people to the sport and to fill their fan base.
Mm-hmm. What are some difficulties you've had as a publicist because maybe the fighter is not doing what they should be doing? And how have you handled it?
Fortunately, I haven't had to encounter that.
Mm.
The only thing that I've ever had to deal with is, you know, maybe missing interviews or had to reschedule or something of that nature. Fortunately, I've never had anybody that was just like a train wreck or anything like that.
Well,
no,
that's,
thank
that's
goodness.
Good.
No.
That's
you know, the only thing that we may have had to deal with would be, you know, they may have missed an interview or something. I've not yet had to deal with I can't think of who's the most scandalous celebrity you can think of. I haven't had to deal with a scandal, really.
Right, right. When they throw chairs or you know, just at an interview, they go crazy and they try to attack the other fighter. Anything like that?
Not really.
Good job. Well, it's.
I mean, and you have to wonder. You have to wonder. You know, so if they do that, I'm just gonna handle it however they instruct me to to handle it. You know, I think an honest approach is the best way to take care of it. Mm-hmm. You're always going to have the possibility. It's a combat sport, and you're going to have rivalries, and you're going to have the possibility of temper flaring and everything. And some of it is fairly good natured, and you can deal with it. But if somebody is just going to be somebody attacks my person, you know, I'm going to have to figure out a way to deal with it. It will test all of your personal skills, mm-hmm. and all your manners. It's really not easy to do, but you know, you just have to come up with a most positive way of dealing with it, and don't make the situation worse if at all possible.
Right, right. Are you currently dealing more with the fighter, or are you dealing with the manager, or the coach, or are you dealing with all three?
Some of both. Mm-hmm. Usually it's a one-on-one thing with the fighter. In Floyd Schofield's case, I deal with he and his father. The same with Keon Papillon, I deal with both of them. With Abel, I deal strictly with he and Terry. Now, I also work with Diego Magdaleno, and we have a good one-on-one situation, but his team manager, Shannon Torres Gilman, is a good friend of mine, and so we're able to work as a team. And I work with Christy Martin as well, and I just work with her directly when she does her promotion.
Mm-hmm. And is she still fighting?
She is currently promoting. She has a show as we speak in Orlando, like right this minute.
Mm. But she's not fighting anymore, right?
No, she is not.
All right. So she's just promoting.
She is promoting, and she is working on her foundation, which is Christy's Champ, and that is to create awareness and support for people that have domestic violence-related issues, as she did in the past.
Mm. Good work on her part.
Absolutely.
What's your favorite part about being a publicist?
Dealing with the people.
What people? The fighters or?
All of it, really. I mean, you get to know some really, really, it's getting to know different people, I guess, is kind of what I like. I mean, I'm used to dealing with a diverse bunch of people every day, all day. So boxing is really pretty diverse and everything. And, you know, you'll find it's just the networking is what I like. And also, watching someone start or from whatever point of their career you work with them from, just seeing what happens, you know, how their stories play out and going through them with hopefully lots of wins and interesting things, seeing the impression that they make on people. I really just kind of like all of it. I like the travel.
Mm-hmm. And as a publicist, are you, you actually go to the fights as well?
When I can. Currently, right now, I haven't been anywhere.
Because of COVID.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of been a huge obstacle for everybody to get around. And I, because of employment, of 8-to-5 employment reasons and everything else, I'm really not going to travel until numbers decrease or improve in a lot of areas, even though I've had both vaccinations, the first and the second one.
Mm. Good for you.
I'm not going to jeopardize anybody that I work with or anybody else that I come in contact with. Like wherever I've been, if it's not safe, even though I've been vaccinated, you don't want to take something to an athlete within the team.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, that could jeopardize an entire promotion.
Right. So tell me, you said your regular job, 8-to-5.
Right.
What else do you do? What else? Tell us about that.
I work for the GEO Group, which is a privately owned medium correctional facility based out of Boca Raton, Florida. And I am in the COC program, which is Continuum of Care.
What does that mean?
Continuum of Care is a post-release program for inmates to further better themselves once they reenter society.
But you're doing this at the jail?
At the prison, uh-huh. We have 2,600 male inmates, medium security with maximum capability. And we currently have probably an enrollment of, I don't know, between 60 and 70 inmates in our program, which is typically never done in a medium security. It's just done in minimum, but it's a pilot program that the chairman of GEO wanted to try in our facility.
And how's that working out?
So far, so good. We have a pretty good success rate. Today, I did 4 exit surveys for the people that we're going to lose. We'll be losing 4 gentlemen here pretty soon. They have to meet a certain criteria to come in the program, and I work on the paperwork to get them together and to find the people. And we'll actually go out physically into the facility, myself and one of the transitional case managers, and we'll see if we can find people that meet that criteria within our population to participate in the program. And you have to be 2,000 days or less out, no misconduct, and a few other things that we have. And then they have individual cognitive behavior therapy sessions, and they're given a variety of exercises to work on between their sessions. And then we also try and keep them engaged, you know, with different activities in between times. I have 2 gentlemen that are very different, but they're both artists. And I've got an art project I want them to work on with the facility administrators, with one of the warden's approvals. I want a mural done by these 2 gentlemen, which will give them the chance to work with different people and also to plan a project.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're going to be released soon, so it gives them a different opportunity to work and do something. And then the one gentleman that I deal with the most, he's going to cover the wall behind my desk in different people quotes. The first one he did for me was a Bruce Lee quote, and he's working on another one that was a Nipsey Hussle quote, and they're all motivational quotes.
Mm-hmm.
And he said the more that he works on them, the more that he and his cellmate discuss the quotes and different things that they mean. You know, even though I'm not actually a case manager, our program director is saying, yeah, I think you can ask them to do these things for you, and it's kind of furthering their rehabilitation, and go for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically do all the clerical support work for the 2 transitional case managers, a lot of paperwork. We kill a lot of trees, create their files. I mean, I've learned within corrections that you may have one job, but you don't do one job. Everybody does a little bit of everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like it's great work that you're doing, and you're helping these gentlemen get on with their lives.
Well, we make the effort. You know, everybody, of course, is wearing masks and everything like that. I ordered some masks from him, and this one has little bitty red boxing gloves all over it.
Oh, that's cool.
And they're like, you know, Miss Green, what do you have in your mask? And I'm like, I have the boxing gloves. Oh, wow, Miss Green, what do you know about boxing? I'm like, well, what can you tell me about it?
Mm.
You know, and some of the Hispanic guys are like, we bet you like Canelo. And I'm like, of course.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they'll always discuss it or ask questions or try to see. They just want to like test your knowledge a little bit because, for one, I'm a female. And then they take an active interest in it. Anything that keeps them talking about something other than disciplinary stuff, because, you know, it's a hard place to be in. No matter how fun you have or what kind of programs you have, it's still a hard place to be in.
Right.
So you just try and have them engaged in positive stuff and try to be as positive as you can whenever you deal with them, because, you know, we're trying to get that part of the housing unit all program oriented people, and get the other ones aren't quite so perfect for it rehomed within the facility somewhere.
Mm. Gotcha. Tell me, what advice would you give someone who wants to become a publicist?
Oh, there's so many things.
Mm.
Know as much as you can about your sport and the people that you're working with, and just always, it doesn't matter if you talk to a little bitty website or if you're in front of your, if you're in the fight of the year and you're surrounded by press, you just always want to be the very best you can to the people that have been with you on the journey with your fighters, because when you start out, not everybody's going to pick up your stories or your press releases or everything, but you always want to, you know, be faithful and very good as you can to your press.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, not only does that create good press, but I mean, it shows it's so much better than when you do. The other thing is always be as positive as you can, because even if somebody doesn't cover you press wise or whatever, they're going to remember everything, and word of mouth is one thing that you can't stop.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, you can you can change the channel so you don't hear Stephen A. Smith or Max Kellerman or whoever, but what people say, you can't stop, you know, you can change the channel and not hear the news, but you can never stop the word of mouth from people talking about it. So always try and represent everybody as positively and as well as you can, and try to meet deadlines. Try to make sure that you don't fail your press and leave somebody hanging on a podcast or on an interview or something like that, because it's important to, you know, make your obligations and fill your time. And that's what they're trying to do, is support you and help you. And then by helping you, then you have people that turn out to see you fight and whatever. But just be the best person you can be. It's hard, though. It's really hard.
I'm sure it is. But you're also writing a fictional boxing novel.
Yes, I am.
What made you decide to do such a thing? It's an endeavor that you're really doing.
I have no idea. I just wanted to do something that kind of captured all the nuances of... I read the Stephanie Plum series by Janet Ivanovich out of New Jersey. And I wanted to create a female character involved in boxing, sort of like Stephanie, but with a little bit more polished edge. And I just started writing this book. I'm nearing completion, and it deals with a female that got into boxing sort of by accident. She's wealthy. She's in the medical field, and she works at a little bit nicer clinic. And she meets a kid that comes in for his pre-fight physical, and the doctor that's, you know, the director of the clinic, he usually works his corner if he needs him. But he couldn't, so he's like, do me a favor and sit in for me. And she's like, yeah, okay, sure. This is really something I know how to do. So she gets in there, and she's kind of, you know, the situation is interesting to her, and the kid wins, and she joins him at the after party. So she's kind of really wants to know a little bit more about it. But he's got all the talent in the world. He's a great fighter, loves to fight. He just doesn't have a good team. He doesn't have a team. He doesn't have money or backing or anything. And he'd had a promoter, and they lost it financially. So, you know, he lost his promoter. And the fight that he wants is a rematch of somebody he actually beat that didn't get the decision. So, she just says, hey, you know what? I'm smart. I have a lot of money. I'll help you. And he's like, yeah, okay, whatever. So she convinces him, and they form a team, and they get a trainer, and they go through, they actually get a promoter and a trainer. She gets a team, and everything is falling into place. He's doing well, and he's winning, and then the end comes, and then there's the conclusion. And then there's a lot of emotional issues that go along. You know, the trainer is a retired world champion, and he had to leave the sport because of a conviction. He actually did time, and he was just kind of shunning the pro world for a while. He was staying out of it for a while. And when she went on her search for a trainer, he was someone she looked up, and he kind of reluctantly agreed to take this kid on. But they end up being, after some time, they end up being an item.
Amy, let me ask you, how long did it take you to write the book? And you said you're almost done with it, right?
I had it in longhand on notebook and put it aside because I got busy with doing other stuff. And when I came back from the last Hall of Fame that we went to, Women's Hall of Fame that we went to, I said I would get it out of notebooks and actually into Word form. So it's taken longer than it should, really, because I have other things to do. So it's not something I devote 8 hours a day to. Mm-hmm. I'd say it's taken at least a year and a half.
Right. And how much longer do you think it'll take you before you finish?
Well, I'm off Monday, so maybe I've got some time to get it done over the weekend.
There you go. You have three days.
Yeah, okay. I do have a plan. I do want to probably Amazon publish it, and then I want to do an audiobook, and then my huge goal in my spare time is to do an indie film.
Nice.
And it's called Split Decisions, because she makes these split-second decisions, and it's kind of a play on words. But she's an unusual character. She's a very headstrong, intelligent female, and she's, you know, into this world because she wanted to she thought the underdog needed a chance.
Where did you get your character motivation from?
I'm going to have to give it all to Janet Ivanovich because I like the Stephanie Plum character. But like I said, I created somebody with a little more polish and a different upbringing and background. I just started writing about her and I made her not the prettiest person in the world, but certainly not the ugliest.
Mm-hmm.
But she's the odd person out in her family. Her mother and her sister are very socialite, and are blonde and curvy and normal height, and she's 5'10", and her hair is like reddish muddy color, and she's got these bright green eyes, and she was always very intelligent in school and tormented her sister, who wasn't as good. And gotcha. She just, the men loved her, but she was always real rough on men. And even going through, you know, the medical school that she went through and everything to be a PA, you know, she was very bright and just always challenged her professors and everything, and always treated her boyfriends like, yeah, I'll find another one, until she meets this trainer.
Right, right. You're definitely very good at painting the picture of what she looked like and her, you know, I'm already imagining, you know, her and, you know, her attributes and everything else that, and what she's done with her life. So kudos to you for, you know, putting it together and looking forward to reading it one day.
I hope you do.
I will.
I don't, I have some marketing ideas in place, and I'm fortunate enough to have enough friends that are artsy, creative kinds that I could probably have some cool art to support some of the things that revolve around the character. Like she likes cupcakes with sprinkles and
martinis
and champagne and, you know, dessert is her thing. Dessert is her thing.
Yeah.
You know, and she's so tall and skinny, she can eat dessert. Some of us aren't.
You definitely bring her to life. Definitely do.
I don't know if I can find a female that does. Every time I see a tall redhead, I look to see if she's skinny enough to be this girl on television.
Ah, gotcha. So you're always looking for that star, huh?
Well, I am. I actually have a friend that I met years ago. I worked for Maureen Shea. She wanted to go and work out at this gym in New York. And when I called, I met the gym manager over the phone. And just so happens, he boxed some, and he's a SAG-credited actor. And the more I started developing the male character in this book, the more I thought, this is him. This is George.
Right.
And he still lives out on Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's him.
Maybe. It could be. Could be.
Yeah.
What are you going to continue doing, or how are you going to continue to be a publicist, and what are your goals with that?
Well, almost retirement age from normal employment. So eventually maybe that's what I'll always do, and just keep the people that I have. Like I said, I have three really young fighters in their 20s. Kid Austin is only 18.
Mm-hmm. At his prime.
So his career will outlive most of us. I will just, you know, my goal is, as far as long range and past employment and everything, is really to see the project through with the book, the audio book, and then the film. And then to always stay with the people that I've been working with. I mean, if there's an old folks home for crazy women in boxing, you might just put me and Terry Moss in it right now.
Very cool. Very cool. Amy, thank you so much.
We plan on it.
Yeah, I hear you. Thank you so much for spending time with me today. And I know you've had a long day. I appreciate your time. Thank you for sharing your story.
Well, I appreciate you thinking of me. Absolutely. I will keep up with it, and I'll be excited to see the link.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll definitely let you know. How can people find you? Let's say somebody is looking for a publicist. What's the best way they can reach you?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn, Amy Green. Instagram, I think it's Amy Green PR. And Facebook is Amy Green. I'm the only Amy Green in Lawton, Oklahoma that works in boxing, to my knowledge.
Mm. So thank you again for today. I really appreciate your time.
I appreciate you letting me bullshit with you.
Yeah, let me know when that book comes out. I definitely want to read it.
I want everybody to know when that book comes out. My husband's really excited, too. He's thinking then he can really take it easy.
Right? Yeah, definitely keep us posted, and look forward to chatting again.
Okay, sir. And if there's anybody that you want to chat with, any of my clients or whatever, just let me know.
Absolutely. I definitely will. Thank you so much.
All right, sir.
You have a great
Thank
one.
Thank you.
You got it.
You too. Bye-bye. Right.
Bye-bye. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. I'll be back with a new episode and a new guest. You can find all episodes of the Coaching Call podcast on Apple, Anchor, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, and wherever you listen to podcasts. I ask that you please leave me an honest review. This episode was made possible by listeners like you. If you enjoyed this episode, go ahead and buy me a cup of coffee. Make it a large. I'm trying to keep this episode free of advertisements. Anything you can donate to the cause is greatly appreciated. To donate, go to paypal.me/SifuRafael. Thank you, and I really appreciate your help.